Welcome to the Danny Carlson Podcast, your resource for growing the business and mindset for a life of unrestricted freedom. Now here's your host, online marketing acrobat, Danny Carlson.
What's up, guys? This is Danny Carlson with the Danny Carlson Podcast. And we have, again, from the other side of the world, literally the exact opposite side of the world, 12 hours time difference, Mike Michalowicz. And this is a guy who I've read a lot of his books, and they've been really instrumental in taking my agency to the point of me not being the single pointed point of failure, or just like, if I stop working on the business, then everything falls apart. A lot of that's due to Mike Michalowicz. Through, you may have heard of some of his books, like Profit First, really instrumental for me in the finances of my business, or Clockwork. Also, like, I mean, some of the mentors that I've worked with just literally threw me over to Mike Michalowicz's book, Clockwork, and be like, go through this, and this will teach you most of what you need to know. And then he has a new book coming out, which we're going to get into here. But first, Mike, I wanted to ask you the question. I got this question from a few members of my audience. How do you deal with your last name for search engine optimization? Because it's just a total nightmare for people typing in your name.
It's a nightmare. Well, I got two hacks. One is, by having a weirdo last name, you're actually easy to find. So if people can just type in Mike and then M-I-C. If you can just remember M-I-C, it's the long Polish name. But the other thing is, my nickname in high school was Mike Motorbike. The irony, Danny, is I'd never driven a motorcycle, but I was Mike Motorbike because it rhymed. And so I got the domain a long time ago. So that's my alternative name. You can go to mikemotorbike.com and find me there.
That's a good way to get around it, because I mean, to be honest, I was having some trouble spelling it out, and I've read your name a bunch of times in your books. So
yeah, of course. I get it.
And I'm really curious to hear, like, what was your original motivation to be a business author in the first place? Because being an author is what a lot of authors would describe as just like an incredibly uncomfortable, painful process of getting what's in your head out there over the course of months or sometimes years, right? So like, what was the original motivation to become an author? And then, do you think that that's like really has rang true for you, to your original motivation, or was it totally different?
Yeah, no, it's rang true. So it takes me 5 years to write a book. I'm not a efficient writer, and I do a lot of research and testing. So it just, it takes me a long time. But I'll show you, I actually have it here. What started it? Here's what started it. I was going to my home office. I started a journal. This is the original journal. I used to say the success journal. I blacked it out because that's not what it's about. And I just started writing down thoughts I had about life and business after I sold my second company and then started a third company and failed with that third company. I lost everything. And I just started journaling. And I started realizing that I was writing a business book here, and decided to do exactly that, to become a full-time author. I devoted myself to the craft 12 years ago, and I've written 6 books. You think, if it takes 5 years to write a book on average, how can you produce so many? Because I write 3 or 4 books simultaneously. So I'm working on 4 books right now. One's due out in about a year, another one about 3 years, and I keep that pace going like that.
That's really interesting. I've never heard of authors doing that before. So you're simultaneously writing 3 different books. Like, how do you structure that in your brain? Is it just the fact that like there's 3 different books out of whatever's coming out of your brain on any given day? Or do you structure this like, hey, I'm working on this book on Tuesdays and this book on Thursdays?
No, that's a good question. So, you know, the research is the majority of the book. So there's research, testing, implementation, writing. So the research stage, some are in that early stage, some are in testing. So right now, the next book that probably will come out is about techniques of marketing. And we are testing it now with multiple companies. And the ones that are successful, we hone it in the craft a little bit more and test it further. I also, I'm an owner in 3 companies. I don't run them. We have a president for each one. But we roll out, we use those companies as guinea pigs. So a lot of it's testing. And then I write every day, 6 in the morning, Eastern time. You'll find me here cranking away, writing every single day. And I write on the core, whatever subject I feel compelled within those categories. But then when I get to the essence of a book, like Fix This Next is a book I just rolled out, in the writing season, which is about 5 or 6 months, then I write probably 4 hours a day for those books.
Yeah. And your books have a lot of like very intricate, but very easily spelled out concepts in them, right? Mm-hmm. So I think one of the reasons why your books are so successful is you take business concepts that, you know, they're in other business books and it's stuff that's been around for a while, but like you just have a way of bringing it to the mass market in a way that regular people can understand, like in a way that people who don't have an MBA or, you know, they are not just obsessed with all the business terminologies can really understand, like the mom and pop shop down the road, right?
Right.
So like, is most of your book just like really figuring out what these pieces are and just like trying to condense it down into something simple and easy to understand for people?
You nailed it, Danny. That's exactly my goal in every book, is to make it so simple that's actionable. You're right. All the concepts are out there. I'd argue actually most of the concepts, all the concepts are already circulating somehow, but they're not digestible. And so I feel an idea falls flat if it can't be done. So our testing is, how do we keep boiling down ideas until I get it to this, the essence of what is impactful? And so one of my books is Profit First. What I realized is we've been told all these concepts around profitability for eons, yet businesses aren't profitable. So we haven't got down to the essence. And what the essence boiled down to being is, at your bank, literally at your physical bank, when money comes in, transfer a predetermined percentage of that money to an account called profit. And if you do that, that starts this profit habit. And that was the essence of the book. And once we did that, we noticed in the test group, there was hundreds of people being successful all of a sudden that never were before. And that's when I was like, okay, we got it now. And I started writing it. And the book is, it's been, for at least for me, very successful.
Oh, yeah. And like, almost all of the mentors that have paid money to work with also are on Profit First as well. So, I mean, I think that speaks for the
value. Oh, I love hearing that.
Yeah. And let's talk a little bit about your new book coming out here. So there's some interesting concepts you have in there. What is the survival trap? Can you explain that for us?
Yeah. So the new book, of course, I have it right in my hand here. It's Fix This Next. And the survival trap was the realization of why so many businesses struggle. So the vast majority of business owners are living in the moment and trying to escape out of the challenges and crisis they have by putting out that fire, but simply revert to a new fire. So the demonstrative is this. If you take the letter A, and you can do it in your mind, and put a circle around that, that represents where your business is right now in the moment. The second step, you can draw a couple arrows, two or three arrows out from A in any direction you choose, maybe different directions. And what those arrows represent are ways to get out of A. And that's how we run our business. We know what the problem we have now, and we find a path to escape it, but we end up in a new A. The third and final step is you draw a letter B and put a circle around that in the bottom left corner of that paper. And what B represents is the vital need of your business, the one thing your business needs from you to move forward. And chances are none of those arrows that you drew pointed to B. And the reason's obvious. We didn't know where B was. How can you draw toward B if you don't know where it is? And that's the illustration. We don't know where B is. We simply know what's happening right now. We try to escape it, and we end up in the next now, the next fire. So most businesses are in existence to put out fires. They do it day in and day out. When we have clarity on what B is, then we can start moving in this direction. So what the biggest challenge entrepreneurs have is knowing what their biggest challenge is. B is their biggest challenge, the vital need that must be resolved. And so that's why I try to teach in this book, is how to find your B.
Yeah. And do you think that that really is the human nature? Like, for example, why news media is so popular is because it's just like urgent stuff that you need to pay attention to. And they always like lean towards the negative stuff because that's what naturally gets people's attention. Do you think that's totally kind of what's keeping people just focusing on putting out the fires in their business as well?
Yeah. And it's easy. It's easy to say, oh, I got to take care of this email. Oh, this client is upset and I got to take care of them, because we can see an immediate impact. The thing the business needs next is likely a shift in its function, improving the sales or having a profit system or bringing about efficiency or focusing on transformation of clients and their experience. Those things aren't something that we can see the immediate impact. But if we just live in the immediate, we're getting immediate relief, but the trade-off is long-term agony. So in this, by knowing what B is, the big move forward, once we identify and start resolving it, then we start seeing the business move forward in big leaps and bounds, and we don't keep getting stuck in that glass ceiling.
I really love that concept too. And like, just speaking from my own experience and my own agency, especially, is like, there's all these projects that I know are going to be good in the long term, but it's so easy to push them off, right? Because there's always something more urgent or something that like, you know, this is going to get me immediate results. And you can't really measure very effectively those other things that like, hey, 6 months down the road, this is going to just make everything so much better and easier. Like, you can't measure it as much, so you don't think it's going to be as valuable.
Yeah, there's a real simple system. I didn't create it. I mentioned it and explained it in Fix This Next. It was developed by a woman named Susie Welsh. She calls it the 10-10-10 method. And it stands for different points in time, 10 minutes, 10 months, and 10 years. And what she argues is most people reflect on the immediate impact of something. And you know, if I'm going to work on those big projects, well, how am I going to feel in the next 10 minutes? It's a lot of work for no return. And that's where we stop our consideration. But then if she says, if we simply ask ourselves in that same moment, how am I going to feel about this in 10 months? Now our perspective starts to change. We're like, well, if I do that project, while it's hard in the moment, this could be a big turning point for us. This could be a defining project. Our reputation may be enhanced by this. If nothing else, it's big revenue. And then how am I going to feel in 10 years? Well, 10 years, I'm taking on the projects I want. And by looking at this immediate, midterm, and long-term perspective, we make much more thoughtful decisions in moving toward B, as opposed to what we constantly do is just look at the next 10 minutes and escape A.
Yeah, very, very good advice, but you know, difficult to follow for most people. So I'm definitely going to be paying attention to that.
Agreed.
And explain also, you have a new concept called the business hierarchy of needs, which I would assume is similar to Maslow's hierarchy of needs in the business context. Is that
very well done? Okay. Very well done. Yeah, actually, if people are watching the video, I got the book right here because it's on the back cover of the book. There's five level of needs, just like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And so this is how it works. The foundational need of all business is sales. Similar to Maslow, the foundational need for all humans is physiological needs. You and I have to breathe. We need to eat food, drink water. Once those needs are satisfied, we have adequate sales, then we focus on the next level of needs for our business, which is profit. Profit is the creation of stability for an organization. Now, if you have no sales, you have no cash coming in, your business is suffocating. It's not breathing at all. So we need some degree of sales, but an infinite amount of sales won't serve you. Like in Maslow's hierarchy, if you keep on breathing deeper and deeper and deeper, and someone has a gun to your head, it's not going to prevent anything from harm from happening. You need to defend yourself or plead for your life, but you need to take measures to gain safety. So the second level in business is profit, the creation of stability for an organization, the safety for an organization. Warren Buffett said, as the tide goes out, you see who's swimming naked. Well, as the recession goes out, we see all these naked businesses that weren't focused on profit and they're done. Once we satisfy the profit level, the next level that needs to be addressed is order. It's the creation of organizational efficiency, where there's no dependency on the owner, clockwork, as you referred to earlier. Above that is impact. Impact is the creation of transformation. This is where clients are being served beyond a transaction. They're having a positive and permanent impact on their lives. And the highest level in the business hierarchy of needs is legacy. Legacy is the creation of permanence. And what's so fascinating about this level, when I was doing my research, I found that this is when business owners realized they were never business owners. They've always been stewards of a business. Their job has been about bringing life to this entity, but their involvement in it is not nearly as important as the continuance of the business. And how does hierarchy work? Like Maslow, you always start at the base and say, are we satisfied there? Do we have satisfactory sales? If so, then we move up to profit. And if it's satisfactory, we move up. If it's not satisfactory, we must address that level. That's where our imminent need is. It's like building a structure. You have to have a foundation adequate to support the level above it. But you don't make the foundation, you know, to support a skyscraper and then put a tool shed of profit above it because it falls in it. It all works relationally.
Yeah, I mean, I really love that framework of that because any business owners who've been running for at least a couple of years, you probably ran into that scenario where sales are just too good and you like have to actually scale down your sales because of other things. And if you don't have the good foundation of good delivery and everything and just built up in the correct way, then it can be a total mess. So do you think that, like, do you recommend in your book or the readers that they have this framework when they're going through, like, on a monthly level or, like, you know, a quarterly level? Or, like, how can they use this framework to really guide their decisions?
Yeah, so the framework should always be in front of you, and you access it whenever you have completed the resolution of your next need, or I call vital need in your business. Now, starting off, many businesses don't know. We just are an A, so we have to identify B. The B is within the hierarchy. When you identify what that need is, and in the book, I go much more detailed. There's actually 25 DNA elements that make up the DNA of business. Once you identify the vital need, then you put a sticker in that or a pin in that, and you got to start serving it. Now, the other thing I want to point out is the other elements of a business aren't ignored. They run on automatic. You know, we're talking right now, but we're still breathing without thinking about it. Same thing in our business. If we have a profit need, you still have to have sales dripping in, but it's not your concentration of where you're fixing things. You fix the profit level. Once that's resolved or it's on a pathway to permanent resolution, then you start looking for your next fix that's needed in your business and focus on it. Sometimes these fixes can happen in minutes. In the book, I have a case study of two cases where the business resolved a need within minutes that had been just ignored for years. In other cases, it can take months. So it depends on how quickly you resolve needs before you move on to the next need.
Yeah, no, absolutely great framework and can't wait to dive into that one in the book. And there's one more I wanted to ask you about, which is called Omen. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so now you know what to fix, right? So B is what you need to do. The question is, of course, how do you resolve it? If I have a conversion problem of my prospects to clients, how do I fix it? Well, Omen is simply a framework to address the elements of successfully converting or going through that process. It's an acronym. It represents four elements. O stands for objective. Almost every entrepreneur knows this. You know, the objective is make more clients or convert more clients. The M stands for measurements. Like, what are we going to measure in the conversion? The number of conversions we have each week, the dollar volume they buy from us. Most entrepreneurs know that. But that's what I leave off, because most entrepreneurs do is set it and forget it. They say, we need more conversions. We need to bring in 5,000 more a week. And that's it. The next element, number three in Omen, is E. I was going to think again for it. E, which stands for evaluation. Evaluation frequency specifically, how often are we going to check on our progress? Most businesses don't set this. Like, are we checking in every week to see how we're doing? Maybe once a month? You know, maybe checking every second is absurd. And that's way too frequently. So what's the appropriate amount of checking in? Now, interestingly, Amazon does check every second on their client conversion. So it doesn't mean it's not appropriate to check more frequently. It says what's appropriate for your business. And the last letter, N, stands for nurture. And this specifies that the measurements we set and the objectives we set and even the evaluation frequency may change over time. We have to give ourselves the flexibility to adjust things, because when we set those goals and parameters, it's based upon our current knowledge set. Well, as we fast forward over time, maybe those things will change. So nurture allows you to objectively look at those three settings, change them accordingly, and keep moving forward.
Yeah, I love those kind of frameworks for that. And the last thing I want to touch on here, I think I know your answer to this, I love the book Clockwork here, but do you recommend that every small business owner should have the goal of being able to walk away from their business and go on a vacation and just, like, no matter if you like to work or not? Do you think that every small business owner should do that, and why?
I don't believe every business owner should do it. I think most should do it. If we want a business that can run in our absence, absolutely, we need to do this concept of the four-week vacation. Because if you can remove your business for four consecutive weeks, the business can run on its own. And even if you're a small business owner, and it's just you, and you remove yourself for 4 weeks, can you set up systems and processes and line up your vendors to keep the business operating properly? Because that moment will come that you do take the four-week vacation. Is this, are you choosing it, or does it happen upon you because you're sick or because there's some crazy pandemic going on or something where you're pulled out of your business? And the only reason I say not everyone should do it, some businesses are treated as hobbies or vice versa, hobbies treated as a business. And this is where when they stop doing the work, they don't care if the income stops flowing. Some of these businesses are the creative businesses on Etsy and so forth. And so those businesses, I don't suggest the four-week vacation is appropriate or clockwork in the business, but I do believe most businesses should.
Yeah, and I certainly have gotten a lot of value from the process. I've done the clockwork vacation a couple times, and every single time I've done it, it has just like illuminated things in my business that, like, now I need to come back and work on this thing. It makes a lot of sense, right?
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
Oh, super, super good. All right, Mike, I know you got to run here, but I do have one last question for you that is more of just a personally interested question, is that I know a lot of different authors and a lot of businesses in general, they have books on the front end of their business, but then there's the things that their customers that just really have gotten most value from them are going to just like buy the higher offers and everything like that. And one of my mentors has a great word for that called the kill box, which is like, this is where like the most valuable thing that you offer, where like it's the most profitable thing that you do. I'm wondering, like, what is Mike McAllister's kill box?
My kill box, yeah. So I do have offers behind it. So I started membership or certifications is probably better. Certification organizations for Profit First. I wrote a book called The Pumpkin Plan. I did it for Fix This Next. So there are experts out there that want to take established systems and leverage the fact that it's already a done-for-you system and the brand awareness is already out there and just be a spokesperson for it and use it in their own tool set. So that's been I never heard the word kill box, but that's been a kill box for me in that we have 175 Fix This Next advisors right now. We have 440 plus Profit First professionals. So people that have become certified in it. And what's wonderful is they are out spreading the word on these concepts while deriving service on it. So for me, selfishly expands the brand even further. And for them, it's a new service offering they can deliver.
Yeah, and I can see as you're recording this interview, you got a Profit First professional shirt on there.
I got one on right now. Yeah.
All right. Awesome, Mike. Well, thank you so much for coming on here and sharing. If people want to find your new book, where can they do that, and when is it releasing?
Yeah, so the book's just released as we're recording this. It's available at fixthisnext.com. It's on Amazon, all these different sites. But if you go to fixthisnext.com, there's a free evaluation there. So you can evaluate your business and pinpoint where you sit in this hierarchy of needs right now in this moment and start working on your business. And then you can get the book to get the details on how to address it.
Awesome, Michael. Thank you so much for your time. And guys, if you are looking for the links or anything mentioned in this episode, all of the books that I personally read from Mike, I'll put the links to those in there as well, the ones that I recommend. And you can find that at dannycarlson.co/podcast. And until next time, guys, go out there and kick some ass.
Thanks for joining us on the Danny Carlson Podcast. For resources mentioned in this episode, visit dannycarlson.co.